I'm told that you finished up with the 12th verse, but this chapter, the way that it was divided up, it's really just one continuous thought. So we're going to look very briefly at the first 12 verses, simply, if nothing else, than to catch me up and get me into what Peter was talking about and warning about here. This is a topic, this is something that has been, the church has been warned about from the very beginning, before the church. Christ warned about this. Peter has preached about this. Paul has preached about this. I'm sure the other apostles preached against it or warned about it, and the evangelist of the time warned about it. But it is something that we have to consider today, because as we go through this chapter, as we go through what they're talking about, what Peter is writing about here, we face the same thing today. We face it every single day. It is permeated our society. And it's not something that we have to just worry about or watch for our individual selves, but especially the influences on the young. Now you look around and we don't have a lot of young in this congregation. But we are the grandparents, in many cases, of the young. We have to help influence our children and our children's children to the gospel and not to society and the problems that come with society and the effects upon the body. In these first few verses, Peter's telling them that there were false prophets, there were false teachers among them. And today we see the same thing. It doesn't matter what David Landis says. If I can't point it to the scripture and say, this is why I believe this, or this is why I'm teaching this, then the elders need to stand up and tell me to get out of the pulpit. If I teach something that's wrong, you need to call me on it. We need to be watchful. Think about the accumulated knowledge of the scriptures that is sitting right here this morning. Decade after decade after decade after decade of accumulated knowledge. That's why we come together, so we can benefit from all of that knowledge, so that we can learn from each other, and we can study the scriptures together, and beware of false prophets, false teachers that are among the body. There is going to be a retribution upon those that teach false doctrine. What did God do to angels that sin? Cast them out. Where are they going to spend eternity? They're going to go to hell. They are going to go to hell for eternity. Now, if God didn't spare angels, is He going to spare you and I? No. He will not spare you and I. Somebody turn over to 1 Corinthians, 10th verse, 13th, or the 10th chapter, the 13th verse. 1 Corinthians 10 and 13, and I'd like somebody to read that.
No temptation is overtaken except what mankind, except what is common to mankind. And that is faithful. He will not let you be naked beyond what you can bear. But when you are naked, he will also provide a way out for you to endure it.
Thank you. God will provide a way out when we are tempted. He will not allow us to be tempted more than we individually, each one of us, can withstand. So when we are tempted and we give in to the temptation, whose fault is it? Everybody raise your hand. Everybody raise your hand. There's not a ever hand should be up. When we are tempted and we give in to temptation, it's our fault. Nobody else's. Because God, one, that temptation we have the ability to resist. And two, He gives us a way out. So when we give in, we're either not looking for it or we don't care. The ungodly are presumptuous. The ungodly are presumptuous. How many of us have been that? How many of us have been that? Presumptuous. We all ought to raise our hands. At one time or another, each and every one of us has been that way. We think we are better than we are. We are mightier than we are. We think we are more powerful than we are. And how do we react to people? How does somebody who is presumptuous? Yeah, you treat other people as inferior. And you, as the gospel says, as Peter's writing here, he says, they rail against people. But how did he compare us to angels? Angels don't rail against people. And think of their might and power right now. But they don't. We can learn a lesson from them. He's talking about these people that, false teachers, these false prophets, he calls them brute beast. That they should be taken and destroyed. It says they speak evil of things they don't understand. They don't understand the gospel. Whether that is by intent or whether that is just by carelessness. He compares the ungodly to brute beasts that need to be utterly destroyed. And they will be by their own corruption. And this is basically what he has been talking about through these first 12 verses. And we are now ready to begin in the 13th verse. But are there any comments or questions on these first 12? I know you had it last week. I'm just trying to catch myself up here. Make sure I'm on the same page. Okay, we're going to go ahead. And we're going to read a few verses, the 13th through the 16th verse. Now remember who they're talking about, who Peter is writing about. And shall receive the reward of unrighteousness, they that count it pleasure to riot in the daytime. Spots they are and blemishes, sporting themselves with their own deceivings while they feast with you, having eyes full of adultery, that cannot cease from sin, beguiling unstable souls and heart, they have exercised with covetous practices, cursed children, which have forsaken the right way and are gone astray, following the way of Balaam, the son of Beor, who loved the wages of unrighteousness, but was rebuked for his iniquity. The dumbass speaking with man's voice forbade the madness of the prophet. The sinners, these brute beast teachers, prophets that are ungodly, They count it a pleasure to riot in the daytime. If you were going to commit a crime, what time of the day would you most likely commit that crime? At night, under the cover of darkness, where you're hidden. Peter is talking about people whose sin is right out in the open. They do it right in the daytime for the world to see. They don't care. They're not, in their mind, I don't think, committing a crime in the civil sense. They are committing a crime against God by riotous living. How would you define riotous living? Nobody can define riotous living. Spring break. Mindless carousing. I think that there is a very simple definition. I'm going to do what I want to do when I want to do it. I don't care how it affects people. I don't care if it hurts people. I'm going to do what I want to do when I want to do it. That is riotous living. Whether it is forsaking the assembly, that could be considered, in that definition, riotous living. It could be holding a party that pulls people away from the gospel, from services, from meeting with the saints, from worshiping God. There are a lot of ways to define riotous living, but we don't have to get carried away. It can be very simple. It also talks about sporting themselves. Thayer says this is living in luxury. Now, it talks about while they feast with you. These are, I think, members of the church who live one way 6 days a week. And then on Sunday, they gather with the saints. In the first century, especially in Palestine, in Israel, there were a lot of poor people. And the church at that time would band together on various occasions to ensure these people had food. And they'd have a feast. They'd have a basket dinner. That's the easiest way to equate it to us. They'd have a basket dinner. And people that lived one way, 6 days a week, living in luxury, would come and eat and enjoy the meal with those that went hungry most of the rest of the time. Look down here. In the 13th verse, it says, spots they are and blemishes. What is the church supposed to be without? The church is supposed to be without spot and without blemish. What is the church? People. We are the church. This building is not the church. There is not a structure on earth that is the church. The church can meet anywhere. And at times through the centuries has. From the catacombs in Rome to buildings such as this and everything in between. So we are to be without spot and blemish. So when we talk about church, let's make sure we remember that we're talking about us. We're talking about people sporting themselves with their own deceivings. I had to do some research on that, trying to figure out what sporting themselves meant. Thayer defines sporting themselves as living in luxury. That is not my definition. That is Thayer's, and he's usually accurate.
What verse is that?
13th. Bottom half of it.
No, I read it, but I cannot read it.
Okay, well, let's read the NIV. Give him the mic, and let's see what the NIV says.
They will be paid back with harm for the harm they have done. Their idea of pleasure is to carouse in broad daylight. They are blots and blemishes, reveling in their pleasures while they feast with you.
Okay. That's pretty much what the English Standard says, too. Any other? I'm going to read it again from the King James. Spots they are and blemishes, sporting themselves with their own deceivings while they feast with you. Now, I have gone through a couple of different commentaries, and I think this is what it's saying. That they are living in luxury. They are not poor. Remember what I think this is talking about is these feasts are for the poor. While they feast with you. While they eat with you. I'm getting a lot of strange looks up here. Start asking questions. Wait for the mic.
Maybe I got this totally wrong, but I was thinking reveling in their deceptions means that, you know, they're wallowing in their deception. They are deceiving the church.
Yes.
With false teaching. And so they are, back in verse two, when it talks about their pernicious ways, you know, they have come in and deceived the church in sneaky ways, and they're enjoying that. They're reveling in that. And then when it says, while they feast with you, I was thinking that was when they do all that, and they know that they're doing wrong and teaching the wrong thing, and then they come and have the Lord's Supper with you.
You could be right. Anybody else? And then Ed.
The explanation in my Bible says, reveling in their bad behavior, the false teachers turned Christian fellowship meals into riotous drinking parties.
Okay.
Now, we all know that this is not what we're here for.
And that is true. And that if we read the letter to the Corinthians, we'll find out that what I believe that was Marge said is exactly what happened there. But I think he's simply saying when they come together to feast with you, they're one of us. They're one of our group. We know them. They assemble with us. But they take great pleasure like the hypocritical Pharisees that Jesus talked to on the outside. They were what? Oh, they were righteous and pious. But on the inside, they were rotten.
Yes.
And so these people take great pleasure in pulling that off. I think that's what he's saying here. They just take pleasure in what they are on the inside is not what they seem to be when they fellowship with you.
Did we have? Do you have a comment?
You know, a more modern explanation of sporting is making fun of. Now, this is a group of people in the church, like a clique, that do look upon the majority as inferior, but they're making fun of the bodies, what they're doing.
Bill's got a comment. Barbara has a comment.
If there's someone among us that denies the Lord and is unrighteous, would we not know it?
We should.
Deception and being hypocritical is a way of life for these people. And the New American for Deception has a footnote that says some ancient manuscripts read love feast, which I think you had mentioned before. So they are, as already been said, I think this is the thing. They're coming in and really corrupting the reason that they're together in these love feasts. And deception and hypocrisy is, that's their way of life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think any of you are wrong. I think this can be taken a couple of different ways, but it boils down to they're being hypocritical. They are deceiving the body, or at least trying to deceive the body. And this is what Peter is warning the church back then in the first century, and that we need the same warning, because the same thing is happening today. Before we go on, any other last questions or comments on this?
These are the people that, when the real persecution comes, they will deny being a Christian.
Yeah. They're not gonna withstand a storm. As it was put, their house is built on sand. Anything else before we move on? Having eyes full of adultery, and that cannot cease from sin. When a man looks upon a beautiful woman, when a woman looks upon a handsome man, you could have different reactions. I don't think there's any of us in here that would look upon a very handsome man or a very beautiful woman and not notice it. We are human. Now, we can continue that look, or we can just acknowledge to ourselves that that person is very handsome or very beautiful and put our mind elsewhere. Those that leave their minds, their eye, on that, that's what he's talking about here. As a human, we cannot help but notice people. But it's how we react to that notice that makes us sin or not sin. This morning on the news, they were telling about a very particular beauty contest that's taking place in the Russian occupied area of the Ukraine. And all of the women in the beauty pageant were also frontline fighters among the separatists. I didn't think they were all that great looking, but I noticed them. But I didn't continue to notice them. I didn't continue to think about their beauty. I didn't look on them with a lustful eye. And this is the difference. These are people that look upon not just people, but things. You know, It's not adultery, but when you look upon gaining wealth as the most important thing in your life, that's a sin. When you look upon always having the newest and the best things, always trying to one-up the neighbors, that's a sin. Where should your heart be? Where should your mind be? Things above, not on things down here. Now, does that mean we can't have nice things? No. Does that mean it's wrong to go out and buy a new car? No. But that shouldn't be all your priority. Our priority is on things above, not on the things down here. And I think this is what this is talking about here. You cannot cease from sin when your priorities are earth-based, secular-based. You are going to sin. We are going to sin when we make those our priorities. We need to put our minds on things above. And beguiling souls, beguiling unstable souls, they have their heart they have exercised with covetous practices. If I covet everything on earth, if I covet making of money, wealth, on always having the newest and the best, then I am a cursed child. Now, fortunately, Barbara and I have never striven for wealth or for the newest of everything. Our lifestyle and our house and our vehicles prove that. We don't have the newest. We don't have the best. Not many people, I don't know anybody sitting in this audience that has the best, the newest of everything, that are wealthy. Yeah.
Everybody in the United States basically are more wealthy than, I think I read the other day that it was like 9% of the human population. If you have, what was it, a car, you're more wealthy than a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm not comparing us to the rest of the world. This is all relative to where you are. You know, a person that lives in a third world country and has a solid structure for their family to live in and that can put food on the table regularly are vastly more wealthy than many of the people in that same country. So, wealth is relative to where you are and the society you are in. Yes, by world standards, we are extremely wealthy. By American standards, not so much. Not so much. Beguiling unstable souls. If, take your occupation, whatever it is, and you have years of experience in your chosen field, and somebody comes in and they're looking to use your business to make money regardless of the consequences on everybody else. And they come in with this fancy idea and they use big words and they are well versed in talking circles around everybody. They can make almost anything seem good. But if you know your business, you can go, wait a minute, here are some problems with this. But if you don't know that business very well, you're looking for things that can help, and you may jump into that. The unstable soul, the unlearned person, the young Christian. All of these things I think Peter is talking about here, although it is not just young Christians. We have all known people that have been in the church for years, decades in some cases, that have been teachers, have been deacons, elders, that are drawn away by false teachers, by people who live a life that is not a Christian life because it becomes attractive to them. Unstable souls can be anybody sitting here today, regardless of our age, regardless of how long we've been in the church, regardless of how much we know. We can know a lot of Bible, but if we don't understand a lot of Bible, they're just words on a piece of paper, and we can be an unstable soul. And this is who these people, this is who these false teachers, this is who the people that are hypocrites, that are trying to draw us away, can affect us. If we don't ensure that we are not an unstable soul. Cursed children, they're called. They have forsaken the way. They have forsaken the way of Christ. And they followed after these false teachers. It has happened before. We can go back to the Old Testament and we can find examples of that. Peter uses one right here with Balaam. There are all types of examples of this all through both the Old and the New Testament. Ananias and Sapphira. I'm going to assume that they were fairly new Christians, but they could have been followers of Jesus from the very early days, for all we know. We're just about out of time. Any final comments or questions? Paul's got one.
I think one of the things we're talking about here is people who are unable to mature in the church. They are looking after, they want lust ever, every worldly thing there is, fame, power, all these things as they want. They're loved by God, but their behavior condemns them. And I think one of the key things here is the effect it has on other people. Your behavior. Yeah. Can have a great effect on those around you.
Maturing can be voluntary. Maturing is voluntary. God doesn't say you are going to be mature on this date. You have to want to mature. And we're going to end it with that because our time is up. I want to thank you for the comments and the participation.